Pretty close to being a porn studio. We've got the seedy music in the background. We've got the cameras set up at the Hilton in Perth. Blair Way, how are you, mate?
I'm great. It's great to be here.
Thanks very much for inviting us to your lovely hotel, mate.
Yeah. Oh, get this up my mouth. Yeah.
Closer to you. Well, welcome to Perth. You come here. You become near a bit now.
Yeah, I get here pretty regularly. There's quite a bit of interaction with our engineering over here, so it's good to come over here. Plus, we look at a few sites from time to time, talk to people, and gain experience from WA Lithium Industry.
Very good. Now we've got Trav dialed in from Kalgoorlie. We've kept him physically away from him. He's pumped up, ready to go. You can hear us, Trav.
I can indeed. Yeah, I'm in Kalgoorlie because I'm Blair's taken out a what are they called? A bloody
AVO.
And exactly right.
I'm no, I'm
prohibited from being near him.
Oh, so mate, we got as repeated again. Thanks for having us coming on for the chat last time, Blair, on the news show. Got plenty of action with.
Yeah, we got a little bit of response.
You got quite the lovely following on the internet. It must be
really?
Very humbling. I would say go down the road of sort of worshipping.
Really? I'm not getting any of that, so I'm challenged internetly.
You're not getting any chocolates in the mail yet, are you?
No, we have pretty happy investors with the work we're doing, and obviously when you're doing a winter drill program and stuff, that's what delivers. That's what people want to see, and that's what they want to hear about.
Yep. No, well, we're going to get into it today. We're going to, as I said, because we're an independent organisation, you'd say, so it's obviously not a paid interview. We want to get into the real
nitty-gritty
of it. So if anyone wants more info on Patriot, PMT on the ASX, PMET on the TSX, plenty of, I'm sure you've done shitloads of podcasts, Blair, today.
Yeah, a fair few. Relatively selective. I like to be
quality,
not quantity. There you go. So,
look, mate, tell us a bit about, I guess, your personal mining history with projects like this. Have you been there and done it with developing a project? I know this is lithium's not the specific case, but about in and around the traps doing similar stuff to what you're doing now.
Yeah, I've spent most of my career in Australia. That's why I have such a strong Australian accent. That's been something across all the time.
I don't know if it's me or you talking.
So being in Queensland, North Queensland, Townsville, I was in Rockhampton, did Australian Magnesium, Sun Metals, Queensland Nickel, was involved with Oceana Gold based in the Philippines, with Ventana Gold based in Colombia, and then got into battery space after that with graphite production in Sweden. So I've traveled around a fair bit, but I've been based in Australia for about 30 years. So the things like the larger companies like BHP was Q&I, Sun Metals, which is Korea Zinc. That was a zinc refinery built in Townsville. Started that in 97, finished that in 99. So that was built at the same time as Century Zinc and Phosphate Hill. So back then Townsville was booming. It's a little sad that it's not the way it is now, was then, but there is projects there, but Townsville was a great town to be in.
Yep. Yep. Now the mum and dad investors we want to talk about today, because there's this mania a bit around Patriot, because you're on to something like a sensational deposit, it appears.
Absolutely.
How big or small we're yet to be determined before the resource comes out. But there's that. Not exactly like Bitcoin, but very, very similar. There's a big following because it's like that exceptional, the assays and widths you're putting out. I guess we want to look at today the risks, the long-term risks of where it's sitting at today. I think it's 1.3 billion market cap today.
Yeah, it hovers around there.
Hovering around there, essentially as a still in early exploration. So I guess we want to go in for that. How does that all feel being – manager being the top dog of the company with such a big market cap, but in the very early stages of exploration?
Yeah, I guess it's not an overnight success. An overnight success always is a lot longer than that. So we have been working away at this for some time. Now we have had some great success, and that is the drill bit, delivering the goods. And I've been involved in a number of different exploration programs, projects, and companies. Some go well because the ground delivers, and some don't. So you keep looking for new ground. And this company you know, in its original form, had a number of assets. It turned out that this asset delivered the goods. And we've been drilling. We've been very strategic about how we procured the funds to do that and how we drilled it out. And we think we've done that quite well and sensibly. People call me Mr. Promoter or some garbage like that. I mean, my God. What I have done is shared a lot of the data of what we're doing. So if we're drilling, I like to do weekly updates if I can. That's what we're doing on the ground. When assays come and assays flow irregularly in, some weeks you get a better week or because it's assays. Other weeks it's about what we've done or how many meters we've drilled or whether we've extended or otherwise. And if you look at our news flow, it's been pretty consistent showing that step by step. We've been working away at it. We started out with our first drill program. We hit four holes. That was good. Then we went to, you know, basically $11 million drill program in the ground, and that delivered us almost 27,000 meters. So we've done it incrementally. We've now done another drill program this winter. We're now in our spring pause. Drills will start turning again another 4 weeks time, and we'll be right back at it. But we of course have this backlog of assays, and that's what keeps news and feeding the, I guess, the excitement. And it is exciting. I mean, you don't come across a property this interesting, but you still have to drill it. You still have to prove it. And you can get excited. We see what comes out of the ground. And we obviously are able to assess that core as it comes out. But we still have to patiently wait for the assays. And the assays continue to deliver and the intercepts continue.
Yep. Before we get into the more technical sort of stuff, I'm keen to hear your opinion on how developed you think the Canadian markets are. Firstly, in regard to lithium stocks and then mining in general, in terms of raising capital for drilling and then also raising that next slab of capital, how you sort of see that Canadian market comparing with the Aussie market?
It's a great question, and that's something, the benefit of my Canadian Australian blend that I have, or whatever you want to call it,
mongrelness. Exactly.
It is a mongrel. So there's aspects in Canada that are good, but certainly within the lithium space, there have been less or really no success stories, whereas here in Australia there have. And if you talk to someone on the street about a lithium deal or a lithium project you're drilling, oh, that's interesting. Have you heard about this? Or have you heard about Pilbara? Have you heard about MinRes? What about Greenbush? There's nothing like that in Canada. If I do the same discussion on the street in Canada, it's like, yeah, lithium, you know, you hear about Nemaska or North American lithium three times.
It'd be like telling us draining lakes is common.
Well, exactly. Don't get me started. But you know, so there is a very strong similarity between Australia and Canada. We're mining countries, are a big part of our economy. Lithium specifically is still a much earlier stage than it is here. And we had the same problems here in Australia 5 years ago. There's a couple companies that went under or went close to being under. They've recovered, or some have been acquired and melded together, like with Pilbara and
Galaxy
Alchem.
Yeah.
But here in Australia, there's been a couple of companies that came close to the line and they got acquired or taken out by a stronger lithium company. But there are strong lithium companies here with amazing cash flow. So we definitely, to be able to raise, and your question to, can we raise money or how do we finance it going forward? Definitely for the exploration, we've had much more buoyancy here in Australia to fund a lot of the exploration work because people better understand it. And there are a number of people within Canada that do understand it and they love what we're doing, and that's great. But the general retail investors, I think, still struggle with the lithium stories because there have been, and look, there are genuine bad outcomes. There was Nemaska, there were shareholders that lost 100% of their investment. That sucks. Mm. I mean, you don't ever, like, sometimes you might lose it and then it recovers. Like, I know Pilbara was down quite brutally at one stage, but they're back, and they're back stronger than ever. And that's part of being an investor and accepting that risk curve of where you are within the development cycle. But when you lose 100%, that sucks. And we've had, unfortunately, that's happened in Canada, and that's why Canadians are a little more cautious.
What do you think about speed to market for you guys specifically? As I said, so up in the air with lithium prices. Funds are they're saying Goldman says one thing, Morgan says another. And especially considering your situation, it could be 2030 before you actually mine lithium. It's a big thing you're taking on. Is there a big speed to market issue for you guys, do you think?
We definitely see the benefit of moving down that path as quickly and efficiently as we can, we have to also not be cutting corners or trying to do sidesteps and things like that. And we brought on a very strong ESG team, and certainly what they're advising us, and we will be demonstrating that permitting pathway. And we think we can do it pretty quickly, and that's sort of 27, 28, construction 27, production in 28. You know, we hope that doesn't slip out. We believe what's good about the commodity in that it's lithium and that it's very positive for North America, and they're desperate for feed. Mm. So we believe, again, not to shortcut, but to be able to sort of facilitate so that we debottleneck some of the slowdowns and, you know, your application sitting on a pile of stuff that gets buried at the bottom. We think that the sentiment in Quebec and Canada and North America as a whole will enable us to do it as quickly as we can. There's no guarantees, like we can't guarantee it, because we're working through the process. But so far, the response, even to early discussions with Quebec Hydro, been excellent. You know, it's still way down the track, obviously, to before we need that power, but we're looking at putting camps in. We're talking about putting power in. You know, sometimes those discussions can be painful. So far, we've had really good, positive response. Same with the First Nation engagement and talking with them. Lithium is more desirable than gold or diamonds, because it doesn't really serve a purpose from a bettering of the earth, whereas, you know, lithium provides an opportunity.
Can't say that in WA, talking about gold like that, these sorts of things.
But, oh, especially with the Kalgoorlie bloke on the phone.
but it's interesting, that sentiment, how much it's changed. Like, I talk to younger investors, that'll say, you know what, we're interested in how this can make the earth better. And the way it can contribute to that is that it's reducing greenhouse gas emissions, not because you're driving your pickup truck from here to Darwin, because you can't do that in electric vehicles. Not yet, and probably not for some time. But what it does do is reduce the amount of gasoline or petrol cars driven in the city or your delivery trucks, things like that. So, you know, there's a real positivity when you talk to investors about it and or potential investors. And the younger people and First Nation people are definitely interested in how is this having a positive. If you're digging a hole in the ground, how is it a positive thing?
Well, speaking of holes in the ground, it's been pretty interesting hearing the reception from our previous chat about the old cross sections, and I promise it'll be the last time we talk about cross sections because I know Patriot's about to drop their mineral resource and include a whole appendix just full of cross sections to please me. So I look forward to that, and that'll be great. But you could put
a text like on the subtitle. This is for you, Trav.
you can annotate the cartoons and say for Trav at the bottom. That'll be wonderful.
No cartoons. It'll be very scientific.
I look forward to when that happens. But before we put it to bed completely, Blair, I'm curious to some of the feedback that came our way was from some, market savvy, JORC reporting type of people who were a bit surprised that you weren't actually reporting sections given the exploration results that have been out to market. So, initially I thought, geez, maybe these guys have gotten a waiver from ASX and they don't have to, but I looked and you don't have a waiver. You're still kind of subject to the same JORC listing rules as everyone else. So how have you gotten away without posting cross sections today? What's going on there?
Well, my understanding is we're not required to at this early stage, and when we are required, once you're post-resource, you can do that, doing it beforehand. Certainly given some of the cross-sections I mentioned before, the ones that I do see, I don't see how they comply with anything. They're cartoons. So, I'm not aware of any mandated requirement to be putting out cross-sections. There's data that we have to put out, and that's what we're putting out.
Yeah, I suppose the information that we've got was from the actual JORC, and correct us if we're wrong, if it's pre or post resource, but
understanding.
Yeah,
the
JORC stated that it needs a drill hole collar location and suitable cross sections to show all that. So as I said, we were
maybe it's a crossover between our compliance with NI 43 and JORC, and there are waivers that because we can't comply with both rules at the same time. And because our primary listing is TSX, I guess that would be the right. There's never been any indication for a mandated requirement for cross sections. Those are certainly voluntary.
I suppose what's the risk for you if you don't, if you put one out above or below a reasonable expectation? Because as we said, like the ones that I know, the ones that you speak of that are that look like they're going in infinity, but I guess that is their interpretation that unless something significantly cuts it off, that would be a reasonable
geologically it's not correct.
And it would, and it could flatten out. It could be even underestimating what's
there. And that's the problem. When you have more, if you only have one drill hole, it's a really invalid drill section. When you start having more drill holes, like you've got a 45 and a 60, you've got setbacks that can then help populate and see what it's doing to depth. But doing one hole and extrapolating it to the surface and extrapolating it to more than the depth of the hole, you know, down dip, we're not, it's misleading.
So I suppose, do you see it from our point of view as like as the retail investors, when there is that much hype and mania around like your stock, it's like we actually really just want to see
what this really looks like. It was a decision, as I think I mentioned before, is a decision we made because it was more confusing than it was beneficial. And we could probably debate it for a week and I could bring half a dozen geos and some would agree and some wouldn't, but I guess we made that. Well, it's not a guess. We made the decision, tried a couple trial sections. We did put a couple sections out early, but they were so rudimentary, simple. They really didn't add any value. But there are sections. I think in one of our first press releases we put out, we put these kind of sad looking sections out. Now we have so many drill holes. We've got a very detailed model. We extract sections from them for our own understanding. But if we were to just publish those sections, people would take away a negative because of the way the model interprets the data in between those data points, 100 meters or whatever, you know, with the way that it actually will taper it away or otherwise until you have the drill data between the 100 and then you
move a little bit sideways and touching back on what Matty had mentioned up front, just in relation to the, you know, the value of the companies, you know, if you look at on the undiluted basis, $1.3 billion, but you know, it's a fair bit higher when you dilute for the oppies and warrants in there. So I'm looking at the valuation and I'm thinking to myself just a bit of a thought experiment around, you know, like Patriot is pretty rumored to be this acquisition target, and so I'm thinking in my head about, you know, what are the kind of environments in which a major would actually approve an acquisition or the ability to make a takeover offer for Patriot, and the project I keep thinking about is of course, you know, Riversdale, because I have a sense that majors are a little bit apprehensive about making these takeover offers for a single development project that has a shadow of development uncertainty cast over it. You know, with the case of Riversdale, they paid billions and the CEO lost his job, CFO lost his job. It ended up, you know, selling for $50 million and government approvals never came. How do you think about that characterization? And if Patriot's different, why is it different?
I mean, that's
not saying you're going to lose your job, mate. It's all good. You're still going to be employed at the end of this week. You're all good, mate.
All right, I'm good.
I think that was of the acquirer. Getting the acquisition wrong, losing his job, as opposed to the company getting taken out.
Oh, you're definitely safe then.
Well, cool. I'm laughing. Who cares?
The job would be done then. But.
So I guess, you know, a single asset company is often what you are as an explorer. It's very unusual that you're an explorer and you're pushing or drilling multiple assets that are all just going off. There's usually one that you end up focusing in. I mean, even within Patriot, we have a number of other properties in Quebec, in Idaho, and a couple of them in Quebec are actually pretty good, but we're not even getting distracted by those. So we are definitely, you know, a single asset. It is big. So if you look at the property that we have, it could actually, we have enough for 4 or 5 juniors and they could all be drilling their little areas, which would be say CV 9 and 10 and 8 and 12 and 13 and CV 5 and CV 4, what have you. So we are, I know I'm not really answering your question, but I mean, we are an exploration company. We've drilled out something that appears to be quite spectacular. We've been sharing the data as much as we feel is appropriate such that people can, and when I say people, these are, you know, technical people, they're the, you know, the majors or whomever want to take a closer look. Like, we're not doing data rooms and things like that at this stage. We need to drill. We need to prove what we have there. You can look at the data as far as what the intercepts are. You can then get the assay data when it comes available and we put it out, and you can build the same model we can without us doing. You can build your pessimistic model or your optimistic model or your mid model, not us telling you what our model is. Is it the optimistic or mid or otherwise? So these, you know, if indeed we are a takeover target and there are people looking at us, we are friendly to everyone. We're sharing the data to everyone. No one's getting any special treatment. And one of the reasons for that is we're busy developing and drilling what we have. And it's big, like just real estate is big. We've got these targets that we just haven't had the, you know, the time to drill. So the, I guess, again, I'm not really answering your question. I think it's, how does it compare to the fact that maybe, you know, maybe we don't have anything there? I mean, I just don't think that's the case. We've got some pretty significant ground that we've, you know, drilling that we've done at CV5. The CV13 stuff also is lending itself, but it's only 14 holes. And, you know, there's always the case that there's always that potential, I guess. We're in an amazing jurisdiction. It's very much the pro commodity. If I was a diamond mine in Quebec, I'd be a lot more pessimistic about my ability to develop, but even gold. But I mean, there's lots of gold mines in Quebec, and it's a very strong industry, and even diamonds. But if you're dealing with we are dealing with a regulator that, you know, I think we spoke last time we talked about the fact that the rules can change and morph, and then that creates new challenges. If anything, the rules as they're changing and morphing are in favor to lithium. Now, does that mean it's going to serve us and we're going to be able to permit in 6 months? Probably not. But does it mean we can hold to our 2.5-year permitting cycle, which is the norm for Quebec? I'd like to think that the answer to that is yes. So as far as an acquirer, I mean, they're going to have to, they have to make their own assessments. And certainly there's lots of interest in what we have. And I've politely said every time, just wait, let us keep drilling and let us demonstrate it.
Yeah, I think we're definitely in a favorable environment here in Australia. In Canada, we saw huge news come out of Chile, obviously last week. So we're in good jurisdictions.
Yeah, the Chile stuff is definitely interesting.
Yeah.
It's not a surprise. It's been on the boards for a while.
They've been talking about that for a while. I just want to stay on the theme of valuation for a touch longer. And I'm just keen to hear your thoughts, because we speak with a lot of junior companies and so on, and we'll invariably hear the CEO say that their company is undervalued. And most of them aren't on the back of a phenomenal share price appreciation like your company is.
Should I say I'm undervalued?
Mate, you're losing your job. You're bloody God. Talk about going away with confidence.
So
he told me to say it.
I do just want to hear like how you sort of see the valuation of Patriot at the moment. They've, you know, you've performed so well over the past year. Whether you think, you know, it's still underappreciated because it's such a great asset, or you think it's quite, you know, rightly valued for where you guys are at the minute.
Or do you think you're right? There is some retail mayhem that's overvalued you. You got the chance to be the most honest CEO ever here, because everyone thinks they're undervalued.
You're giving him a layup.
Okay, I can't win here. Look, at the end of the day, yes, we've had a very good 12 months, but during that 12 months, we've done a ton of work, and that work has delivered the market cap that we have now. I could certainly show you some comparables that people could argue that we're still undervalued. But I can also show you some comparables that could say that we're overvalued. So at the end of the day, the market decides whether we're overvalued or undervalued, because they decide with their, you know, we're mostly retail. We have some institutional, but it's more retail. And retail is a little bit more emotional. So we see that in our share price. We get some, you know, we have a reasonable amount of volatility. There's a bit of arbitrage between Canada and Australia as well, which probably doesn't help us either. But as we mature, I mean, we're still really, we dual listed in December last year. So we're only just really into that. The market still hasn't truly settled down between the ASX and TSX. So to answer your question, are we undervalued or overvalued? I'll be conservative. I'll say the market, I guess, is dictating what we're valued.
Yeah.
I think we have, given the scale of the property yet to be drilled, we still have a lot of upside.
And what is that step to get institutional investors? You obviously talked about a large retail upholding. What's that? Is that just getting the resource out this quarter?
I think the resource will help a lot. On the TSX, we're on the venture, and that limits some
yep.
bigger institutions. I think down here we're seeing some uptake. We are getting more institution down here. I think if we get on the ASX 300 as well, that can help. So there's steps there that can help, you know, make it more viable for some of the funds to come in. And we do have some funds. It's not that there's no funds, but I think, you know, certainly in TSX, the TSX venture does limit us to a degree. Yep. But as we grow and evolve, then that will change.
Do you wish you had, like it was primarily listed fully on the ASX compared to the TSX with the, as you said, if you're struggling with the Canadians about the lithium side of things, in hindsight, would you wish the other way?
I guess if you're only talking purely from a market point of view, but you can't really look at this asset that way, or you can't look at any asset. I mean, we are in Canada. The assets in Canada, we're in Quebec. You have to still be in Canada. You can't extract the resource out of the country. So I think it would be a disservice to the asset, to the company, to say, all right, well, now we're only ASX listed because the market gets it better here. I think it's created opportunities, and I think there are some Australian investors that have done very well, and rightly so, because they took the risk that others would not. And that's, I mean, we are becoming more and more an international market, so we're a primary listing and all that sort of stuff. But if you were only talking about, you know, our valuation and market cap, then Australia certainly seems to get it right now. But I think it will translate, and we'll see that over time. The more drilling we do, the more we de-risk the project. But drilling is just one part, one element of de-risking, as we de-risk it with pre-feasibilities and demonstrate the metallurgy, demonstrate the permitting, and head down that path. I think we'll see the markets really start to come more together.
Just to touch on that, just, you know, once more, I'm remembering, you know, like in recent history, we've had a couple of really big new discoveries in Australia. De Grey and Chalice come to mind, and, you know, to the best of my knowledge, at the same sort of period of time in their development cycle, both of those stocks were a lot more institutionalized from a register perspective, you know, than it appears that Patriot is. What explains that from your point of view?
Off the top of my head, I can't explain it. I think we're not, I mean, keep in mind, we've been listed on the ASX now for what, December, 4 months, 5 months. We've been on the ASX for 5 months. We've been on the TSX much longer, but during the TSX, you know, in the TSX days, we were still drilling, still growing. I mean, this time last year, we were in April now, we were like $3. We're $3. So in Canada, like we've done a lot in a short period of time. And I've gone to talk to institutions and they go, oh, you're $4. You've run too far. We can't do anything. And then I come back and a couple months later, oh, you're $8. You've definitely gone too far. I come back, it's $10. Like, so we've had a bit of everyone, like a lot of the institutions thought they've missed the boat. And
is that a lot due to the retail mania a bit?
I think it's just in Canada, it was because they're like, well, how high can it go? Like you're a junior and you're at $1 billion market cap. That's as far as you can go. But that's actually not true. When you look here in the markets here, you're seeing, you know, we look at Liontown and look where they are. Now they're more advanced stuff, but yeah. You look at their market cap, it's like, holy, you know, it's significant. Yeah. It's, yeah. And if you start comparing apples to apples, well, our market cap doesn't look so crazy, but it sure does in Canada to investors. So since we've been in Australia now, we are seeing more. There are Australian institutions. We did that $50 million financing, and a large chunk of them were institutional. So we are picking it up, but we have a lot more.
Because you think a lot of Liontown's values in the, as you said, that phase of like all the exploration's been done, it's been constructed, it's permitted, they're pending production. There's a lot of value attributed to that. Because, and like, look, your resource could well exceed Liontown's
or our metallurgy or our mine stripping ratios. All those things could be better or worse, but if they're better, then, you know, there's still that potential that we see is still left on the, you know, on the table. And I keep coming back to it, but we just have a ton of work. If it was only one little property, we'd be probably further advanced. But every time we keep drilling, the most recent assays we put out, we just extended it by 500 meters. You know, every drill hole we do just keeps making it bigger, which is great. But it also means that, you know, as you do a pre-feasa, you got to draw a line in the sand and then say, all right, we're looking at this. But meanwhile, we're going to keep drilling and it's going to keep adding to it. And, you know, assuming the drill keeps delivering. So
it's a good
problem
to have.
Oh, no, it's a great, don't get me wrong. It's a great problem to have.
What about your you personally, like, cause your name's attached all over this. Do you want to see this through? Like, do you have a long-term goal for this project personally?
I mean, that's my background. I'm a notorious finisher. So, you know, that's the plan, but you have to be, I have had to learn in my career to become a little more pragmatic about what I can do to finish things. And sometimes you have to be sensible, but what I'm used to doing is taking these projects and taking it through the whole de-risking, and we get to a feasibility study. I love building stuff. It's fun. That's when you're really putting the rubber to the road. Exploration's exciting. And then you go through that sort of development cycle, and then you start, you know, like building the Sun Metal Zinc refinery. It's 2 months, or sorry, 2 years, and you're just in it all the time. You're there all day, every day. And then you see this plant just grow up out of the ground, and it's in production. So I'm getting old, so you never know. So I'm like, going to give me the punt because I'm too
old.
There's a bit of a perception that Australians like to sort of discover the asset and take it all the way through, and then Canadians perhaps like a sort of result of the equity markets or whatever are more primed to sort of prettying up the asset and selling it. Do you agree with that, or
yeah,
do you think that holds any water?
I think there's some pretty good examples in Canada of taking it. Oftentimes you sort of, you know, Canada back, and maybe it's evolved a bit, but certainly Canada back in the day with all our, you know, the nickel industry, and now in sadness, a lot of the nickel industry has been sold off to the valets and the like. But I mean, they went through decades of building and growing and self-executing. And even having said that, even being owned by Valet or Glencore, you still got like Voisey's Bay has been developed and is in production. Now, it's not owned by a Canadian
Inco
company.
Bought it out.
That's held by Inco. And then, it used to be, you know, Sudbury was the center of nickel in the world, really.
Yeah.
And now it's, and it was all Canadian owned, and now it's, and Valet and the like. So I don't know if it's fair to say that Canadian companies, exploration companies, are gussying things up and selling. I'm sure they do, but it happens here as well. I don't know. I think that's a bit hard.
Jack Russell, you got any more, mate? Or you got to suck it up.
He just wants a cross section.
Exactly right. I'm absolutely can't wait for the.
I'll draw one on the whiteboard for you.
Oh, have you got any of the old ones? Even just the up at the upper end.
I've seen the old ones.
Just to shut us up.
I have seen the old ones. Well, I've seen one. I've seen one old one.
Was it a good one? Did it look good? Was it a good one?
No, there's. It's in our old, some of our old presentations, and our old, they're so ugly.
I'm just fascinated. I'm going to follow this story pretty closely, Blair. You know, we're all interested. There's a lot of parts of the story that intrigue me, like, very deeply. You know, especially when we talk about the institutional appetite. I have a hunch that has a bit to do with, you know, the valuation and the promote scares people a bit. And sometimes people think they've missed something, so they stay away as well because they feel like they got getting in too late. And I think all of that stuff is real. And I just, you know, I hope the I hope it all pans out well for everyone who's along for the ride. Sometimes it doesn't for, you know, stocks that are susceptible to massive retail mania.
I got a question for you. So I hear this a lot, the promote. So describe to me the promote. Like, is putting out a press release on drill results a promote?
Look, the biggest thing that is a promote to me is comparing a project that doesn't have a mineral resource to a gold mine with 10 million ounces at 90 grams per ton.
That was never anything to do with that. I know you don't agree with that, but it was never, like, I pulled that figure like out of the sky.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And with all due respect, there's no CEO on the ASX that would possibly think it was appropriate to ever make that statement. Well, maybe there are some, but very few CEOs on the ASX would think it's ever appropriate to make that equivalency.
It was not an equivalency. That's the thing I said. Imagine coming, like, it was nothing to do with our project. It was to demonstrate the lack of understanding what a good lithium asset might look like. And I said, in Canada, if you were talking about gold, they'd understand. I could have said 100 million,
let's just think about this from a, you know, responsibility perspective to your shareholders, right? A massive retail following. What are they going to do? Latch onto every word you say and take it as gospel, whether you mean it literally or not.
But I assume they listened to the entire, like I listened and read it again, and I still couldn't see how you could interpret that as anything equivalent. I never said anything about equivalence. It was like, imagine someone walked into a room and said, hey, I got 100 million tons at 1%, or hey, I got 100 million ounces at 1 ounce or half an ounce, whatever.
So you feel no guilt if there's the marginal shareholder made an investment based on that analogy.
But that's one, that's like one quote that you've referenced from one very recent interaction. But all right, take that out of the equation. What's the promote?
I sit, you know, the promote to me is including, you know, basically I could probably count 55 photos of core in your last 10 announcements. It's a lot, right? That in Australia is spivvy as hell.
So it must be the difference between Canada and Australia, because I mean, you're presenting only facts, like, and so people can see what's in the core. Because you can't take them to site, and people, yeah, it's so now I, so my understanding of promote is pictures of core is promotional, and explaining the context within where, you know, lithium sits within Canada, given that there's little understanding
if that context, you know, incorporates equivalency to gold at 90 grams per ton,
because I'm absolutely not a promoter. I'm the least, I get haggled more for being not promotional enough. So it's kind of funny. It's a funny twist. But all right, pictures of core and doing comparisons between Canada and Australia.
I don't think we'll see eye to eye on this one, but I think
I think we should sit down and listen to it again.
From where I sit.
Oh yeah, we should have got the quote. Where was the quote actually?
It was a long call I had with a fellow. I think he lives in Colombia. I forget which one it was.
I heard it on a. I forget the name. Is it Mining Stock Daily or one of those other?
We were talking specifically about the fact that no one in Canada understands lithium. No, we're not talking about Patriot or Corvette.
There's ways to make that analogy without comparing your deposit that doesn't have a mineral resource to, you know.
But I wasn't even talking about Corvette. I was talking about something unrelated. But anyways, you clearly have a dog with the bone, which is fine. But I mean, there was never any equivalency thing in there. It was really. So tell me what's the issue with the Canadians understanding what lithium means compared to what gold, and Canadians just are still very much at the very early stage of understanding lithium, and that's all it's about.
And if that's the point, Blair, they're the words you need to say.
Well, I did, but I put an analogy, and I did give one for you guys where I said it's like I got a really cool Ute, or I got a really cool pickup truck. If you use the word Ute in Canada, I just had it today in our meeting. I mentioned the word Ute, and they're like, what? Because there's a few Canadians here with us in our meetings. And I realized, I just forgot to translate because I'm in Australia. I don't usually translate. But that's all it was. Like, what's a Ute? What's a pickup truck? That's the point. They just are not familiar with it. It's the same thing. It is sort of the same thing. A tray back versus a style side, not a big difference. They're both Utes by definition.
Hopefully it's just sort of a function of time, like you sort of said before the interview when we were speaking, because the Canadian market hasn't had that sort of success story to latch onto. They have nothing to sort of relate it to.
There's no comparables at all. And even though Australians think that everybody knows about Pilbara or MinRes or any of that, they don't. A few do, not everybody. But for the most part, and Australians don't know much about what's going on in the mining sector in Canada for the same way. We all use Google or something, and Google defaults to google.au. And I tell the guys in Canada, change your search engine to google.au, and you'll find all kinds of good stories about lithium. And that's my advice to them. Because if you go into google.ca and Google lithium, it's not pretty ugly. Yeah.
Well, Oregon, it's been a good Trav, are you gonna stop there?
He's not letting it go.
Are you gonna stop there or you got any more? We don't want to miss the opportunity.
Sorry, mate, I couldn't quite hear you, but I think we can wrap it up and appreciate. Thanks, Blair. It was good to chat again. I'm sure it went
well. We really appreciate that you've faked it. You know you're gonna not come and have a promotional interview and you still give us the
no
time.
No comparisons.
You know what to do the next time to make an happy.
I got it all figured out now.
Well, we've got a bit of a present for you. Now, I'm taking a gamble here. I actually told Trav I didn't want to do this, but I was trying to be mature. But I feel that, like, as this would just, it symbolises the relationship between the four of us. And you said you loved cartoons. So and we thought, the Financial Review does cartoons to sort of take the piss out of things. So Trav has kindly done something up for you. Cool. We hope you see the humour in it and you don't walk out. But we reckon I'm going against my initial judgment here.
I thought you were going to veto it, Matty. I was staying quiet on this
one. No, no. I put
my glasses on. Yeah. Probably better I don't put them on.
Oh, you might have to. You might need your glasses here. It's actually.
Now I'm really aging.
He's actually got this drawn up using some online source. We thought between the arguments about cross sections and lakes and everything, we thought, why not? We'll have a bit of a laugh at the end.
Now, what I take offense is I hardly ever wear tie. Other than that, I'm okay. I'm not a suit and tie guy.
I think Trevor's probably thinking we had an argument a lot. No, I don't want to put it out. We're like kids, but I think, after the Viber, we appreciate you giving us the time.
Can't take things
too
crazy.
I do want to point out, Blair, it's 100% satire. It's a good joke. And we know this is all in good sport, the back and forth. So I hope you can see the funny side of it. And it's a cartoon, of course, because I know you love cartoons.
Well, that was the whole thing. We know you love a good cartoon.
Everyone loves a good cartoon.
Well, I think if we can get put ourselves in the bottom corner of the first section and do a live, we will actually do it. And after that, once it comes out, I can tell you right now, we'll do a promo video for you on it.
I wonder if we could do a 3D print of the model. And you could get it about two meters long.
We could get into the VR industry with this ore body.
Bellevue back in the day had a phenomenal one. You could flick it round, look from all different angles.
But that was in a PDF type thing. You could.
Yeah, it was as soon as you went onto their website. Yeah.
No, I'm thinking actually print out 3D print. Seconds, it would look like a giant sausage, right? Yeah. But it would be say like a because of a sausage sizzle of.
There you go.
Hey, well, before you do anything drastic like that, just run it through Trav first. Get his official.
Make
sure it's not too promo.
And I can't mention goal. Okay.
Make sure it's not too promo. Get it signed off. I think, Trav, do you want a job? Is that what you want?
So what color? It can't make it gold. What color should it be?
Well, maybe Trav will send you a style guide, I think. <That's
right>. Sounds like a plan.
Well, mate, hope you enjoy your time in Perth and look forward to chatting you again. We can't wait for the bloody resource to come out.
Me too.
Very, very excited.
Oh, it's going to be good.
Any further update on the approximate date of it?
Yeah, we're still saying the end of June, but it could roll into July as we wait for some of these assays. We're still going to decide, but we've had such a great winter drill program. We're a bit torn, but either way, even when we put it out, we'll still have had all the summer drilling on top of it. So it's no matter when we put it out, there'll still be a bunch of drilling.
Well, I hope it's bloody big and you can say that'll shut those money of mine guys up.
No, I don't think it'll shut anyone.
All good. No, right, thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much for letting us in.
You too.
Cool.
Hey, Roe, Trav.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Trav. See ya.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.